Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Champion Reads podcast, where we are discussing best-selling books, also just enjoying some of the classics. This is an opportunity for anyone, anywhere to listen, participate, maybe gain some new insights and new knowledge, but also just listen to the opinions and thoughts and maybe even the self-discoveries of several individuals on the Champion Circle team as we actually are doing our own learning. And this is an important and powerful process in how we learn, and we invite you to join along. The schedule is that we are just wrapping up Outwitting the Devil, and let me show you on our screen the book that we're currently reading. This is an absolute fantastic book. Sharon Lecter is the she narrated and annotated the book. It has a unique history, which we've covered in parts one and two, but to sum it up and to bring you up to speed, is this book was written back in the 1930s, and in fear that this release would actually bring, you know, some sort of negative effect to the family of the Hills, Napoleon Hill's wife begged that they would not publish it. And both have now since passed, and the Napoleon Hill Foundation, who currently runs and operates the foundation of their honor, and the creation of Think and Grow Rich, they finally got their hands on the manuscript and were able to publish a copy that seemed appropriate for this day and age. And we love it. We respect it. It's a great book, and we're happy to walk through a few more principles from it before we get into our next book. So I'd like to personally welcome our executive director, Mr. Ian Sturmer, joining us today. Ian, we're glad you're here, and let's go ahead and just get started. But first of all, before we do anything, let's invite all of our listeners to just like, subscribe. If you'd like to send us an email, you can send it to info@mychampioncircle.com. And in that, you'll be able to send a question. We'd love to bring up anything that you send us here on the show, because it's possible that, you know, there's things that we're missing or didn't cover or didn't even think of that you have. And so we'd love to hear from you as well. In fact, I would love to get some fan mail. That'd be awesome. Not hate mail. If you have hate mail, you know, just manifest whatever you need to do and you got it. But fan mail would be awesome. So if you enjoy this show, please just let us know. Also, you are welcome to subscribe to us. Sorry, it is late July and I've got allergies in my eyes as I'm itching on screen. That's embarrassing. Anyways.
I thought you were winking at me.
A very obvious wink, buddy. Yeah. and I appreciate the team who's made it possible to be here to have these conversations and to dive into the book. Now, our secret is, you know, a lot of us are grabbing physical copies. I'll show you mine. We're grabbing physical copies of the book. Some of us are on Audible. Some of us are skimming through it as much as we can through ebook, but we're just trying to gain a sense of information and knowledge. There is no reading schedule. It's basically you have a month to read a book, and we're trying to read 12 books this year, which is fantastic. And the ability to do this is it's just amazing. Like I never thought I could read a book and then talk about it with friends and then put it on YouTube later. Like, this is fun. But popularly enough, our podcast is on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, which I think most of you use, Spotify. And even now it's on it's on Amazon Music or Amazon Podcasts. So please check us out. Give us a subscribe and we will continue to provide more great information on this. All right. Enough of those opening exercises and enough of me. Ian, let's talk. This is our third section of Outwitting the Devil. And just to give everyone an overview, there's a few topics and discussions and items that we wanted to cover that we haven't yet. And we'll briefly describe them, but we really truly want to hear from you and what your thoughts are. But the topics include hypnotic rhythm, the seeds of fear, definiteness of purpose, education and religion, and self-discipline. In between them, we'll sprinkle in some of our thoughts, our ideas, what we're learning, what we think, and just our influenced thoughts on these topics. And we'll try to give some insight and share a few quotes from the book. But continuing on our conversation from last episode, we talked about the power of drifting and how the devil uses drifting as his number one tactic, his number one tool to influence and to have mind control over the majority masses of humanity. And before we get into conspiracy theory type conversations where we say, oh my gosh, like Yeah, I feel like we're in a simulation, or like there's so much going on. And yeah, there's evidence that might exist, or that might be, your particular circumstances. One of my favorite TV or one of my favorite movies is The Truman Show with Jim Carrey, and how he's truly not in reality. He is in a simulation, and people are at home are watching him live. And, you know, sometimes it feels that way, but the reason why it feels that way, and it has a lot to do with our first principle, but the idea that you might be under mind control because of something called drifting means that yes, you have the ability, and maybe you do think you have the ability to pick your own, meal for the day, order your own food, to apply for your own jobs. You do have choices that you're making on a daily basis, but those choices may be clouded by an umbrella of an overseeing drifting tactic that the devil uses. And whether you believe all this or you don't, this is just a great concept to understand, that this will help you become aware, and more self-awareness leads to clarity, leads to progress, leads to provisions. It leads to a lot of great things. So whether you believe it or not, just go along with us for this conversation. We don't want to sound like total, cult followers in this conversation, nor this concept, but for the benefit of just having a great debate and discussion, just to hear us out. So again, drifting is so important, or it's an important tool that the devil uses in his tactics. And amongst drifting is this idea called hypnotic rhythm. And if anyone has ever heard of hypnosis, hypnotherapy, hypnosis, hypnotic stuff, you know that it is a way of grabbing your attention and allowing you to function, but under a particular rhythm. And a rhythm is a repetition, right? A rhythm is something that continues to go on and on and on. Technically, the Energizer Bunny is a hypnotic rhythm, right? He just goes dung, 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 and he's always doing it. But there is a rhythm to hypnosis, and many of us could be under hypnosis in many ways. But it's not just hypnosis. It's just an attraction to repetition. I'll share a quick story, and I need to make this quick because I want to pass it over to Ian. But I actually had a dream once, and it scared the poop out of me. sorry for saying the word poop. This dream was I was caught in between the drifting phase and the awareness phase. And when I woke up to my senses, I looked around, and I was in this dark alleyway in the middle of the night. And I saw a bunch of people running around with crowbars, with shotguns, and with these tools to bash in screens. And they were running around the downtown area, and they would look at TVs in the window, and they would smash them. They would look at phone stores and iPad stores, and they would smash them. Anywhere that there was some sort of flashing lights and connected to some current of electricity that could steal your attention, they were smashing them in. And I pulled them aside, and I said, "Hey, I mean no harm. What are you doing?" And they said, "We are part of this militia, and we are here to destroy the hypnotic devices that the evil is using to mind control each of us." And while I was like in this dream, like, what the heck is going on? What did I get myself into? I actually started asking more questions and following them around. And before you know it, I was joining them, because in a sense of turning away from the screen and focusing on my life, I felt like for once I had an original thought. And then I woke up, and the dream was over, and I thought about that. I journaled on it, and I pondered on it, and I realized in many, many ways, even our televisions, our phones, our devices, anything in front of us that has a screen has the ability to capture our focus, to capture our attention, and they are captivating. And they are a tool and a device and a thing that can pull us away from our ability to to break our hypnotic rhythm. The things that break hypnotic rhythm, I'll just list a few and then I'll pass it over to Ian, for me, are exercise, staying away from modern music. Sometimes it's better to listen to, you know, more of like an ambient noise music, and that might sound weird, but follow along with me for a minute. Cold water, showers, jumping into lakes. Okay. Physical touch is one of the major senses. Smell is a major awakener. Those are just to name a few, but I definitely wanted to just lead into that conversation and that topic of hypnotic rhythm. Ian, what would you like to say or add or share regarding hypnotic rhythm?
Yeah. Well, just to carry on with your breaking hypnotic rhythm, I think the biggest one is thinking. Taking time to stop and be aware of something. So just had an experience recently when I was growing up, loved music, and probably the most evil being in the universe to me was Madonna, who I just absolutely hated everything about her. And on the radio a week or two ago, one of her songs came on, and it finally hit me that really is not that bad of a song. Once I stopped letting all of this subconscious stuff that I had built up in me and actually listened to the song, okay, it wasn't great, but it wasn't that bad. It wasn't something that I would run out of the room, you know, screaming if it came on. But I had convinced myself before that I should run out of the room screaming anytime one of her songs came on the radio. And I'm going to read just a little bit here from Sharon Lecter's blog, talking about outwitting the devil. And I thought this was fitting here, because our thoughts and beliefs make up the system that we use to make choices in our lives. A belief is simply a thought that we think over and over again until it becomes a way of living. And I think hypnotic rhythms do that. As we drift through life, we just, you know, we learn things and we accept things without thinking about them. You know, the wind blows this way, so I will move this way, and there's nothing I can do about it. And we start to make that a belief subconsciously, and then that's just something that we live with through all of our life. And until we stop to think about why we're doing something, we let that subconscious rule us. And the subconscious, read an author recently, I'm trying to remember his name, it's like Big L Schweitzer or something like that for the last name. And he talked about how dumb the subconscious is. So I'm going to walk you through a scenario here. You're at the movie theater and you're looking at the screen, and you know full well that you're looking at photons hitting a white screen that are creating an image. And that image is actors that are being paid to say something that somebody else was paid to write, and somebody's directing how they're supposed to do it. And you know that this whole thing is entirely made up. But then when Old Yeller dies at the end, what do? You start bawling.
Yeah.
Even though you know full well that the whole thing is made up. But we've allowed our subconscious to take over, and we drift through this because it's easier just to follow along the story than to stop and think of what's really happening. So whatever we can do to become aware of what's going on, if it's a slap in the face or a jump in ice water, or just a sudden realization that's not as bad of a song as I always thought it was. If I actually stop and listen to it, it's okay. But stop and pay attention. You know, wake up in life, kind of what you started to do in your dream. You went up and talked to somebody to see what's going on. Okay, you failed in the end and drifted along with them, but you had a good start to it.
I had a good start.
Ask questions. Ask why. Think why that's happening. I think that's the biggest thing to break out of a bad hypnotic rhythm, or to recognize that you should continue a good hypnotic rhythm, when you step back and say, why am I doing this? And just keep doing the ask yourself why over and over again. So maybe it's too simple, but.
No, I love that. And again, we're in a constant battle against drifting, because it is human nature to settle, to be comfortable, to get into a rhythm of familiarity. But what we've learned through personal development and just, you know, complete growth is that being uncomfortable, or being comfortable with the uncomfortable, is truly the goal, because you need to put yourself in a place where you're constantly growing and stretching. I would like to take a second, and I'll just kind of wrap this conversation up on hypnotic rhythm. Ian did a great job of really summarizing this. I feel like it helps to hear Napoleon's words, and he talks a lot about nature. And I've come to learn and love nature throughout my life, but even more so when I read Napoleon's work, because he pays such tribute to how powerful and undefeated the Mother Nature really is. But take this as an example. Take the simple illustration of climate, for example. Anyone can see and understand that nature forces every living thing and every element of matter to adjust itself to her climates. In the tropics, she creates trees which bear fruit and reproduce themselves. She forces the trees to adjust themselves to her scorching sun. She forces them to put out leaves suitable for protection against the rays of the sun. These same trees could not survive, though, if removed to the Arctic regions, where nature has established an entirely different climate. In the colder climate, she creates trees which are adjusted to survive and to reproduce themselves, but they could not survive if transplanted in the tropical regions. In the same manner, nature clothes her animals, giving in those in each different climate a covering suit to their comfort and survival in that change. So in a similar manner, nature forces upon the minds of men the influences of their environment, which are stronger than an individual's own thoughts. Children are forced to take on their nature of all influences of all of those around them, unless their own thoughts are stronger than the influences. So again, just wrapping this up, nature sets up a definite rhythm for every environment, and everything within the range of that rhythm is forced to conform to it. Man alone has the power to establish his own rhythm of thought, providing he exercises this privilege before hypnotic rhythm has forced upon him the influences of his environment. I probably could have just read that last paragraph, but I like the part of nature because it really is powerful. Hypnotic rhythm isn't a bad thing, but the devil uses hypnotic rhythm to get into our minds and help us to get us into a rhythmic repetition that doesn't allow us to think and make decisions for ourselves. And Ian summed that up very, very nicely. So I think this principle is just something to be aware of. So are we constantly in hypnotic rhythm? Of course we are. There's so many things around us, nature in and of itself. There's a reason why we feel cold and feel hot and everything else. But at the end of the day, it's being able to make decisions based on your ability to recognize that you are influenced by the natures of normal rhythms.
Yeah. Just to carry that, I was thinking about the nature, and part of this hypnotic rhythm is that everything in the world is going on around us. And we really can't control it. You know, if I go out in front of my house and it's raining, I get wet. If I go out there and it's snowing, I'm cold. If I go out there and it's sunny and hot outside, then I'm hot. It's easy to say that because you can't control that nature. I cannot control it raining or not. But the fact is, if it's raining and I go outside with an umbrella, I don't get wet. If I go outside when it's snowing with a coat on, I'm not cold. I can't control what's happening, but I can control how I interact with it. And that devil's version of hypnotic rhythm wants us to say, you can't control what's going on, so you have to deal with it. You have to be hot or cold, whatever nature's whim is, or his whim, or the world's whim, we have to deal with that. We have to just accept it and be miserable. Unless we break out of it and say, this is what I can control. I can control having an umbrella. And that's one of my rules of life, is never get mad at the rain, just carry an umbrella. Then you never have to be mad at the rain. So learning to take control. And I want to, go one more quick principle here.
Absolutely.
There's so much of the world we can't control. And we want to control it and we get frustrated. There's a great ancient Chinese Taoist principle called Wu Wei. And forgive me if I pronounced that a little bit wrong. But Wu Wei roughly translates to action through inaction. And what it basically means is look at what's happening and be aware so you know sometimes you don't have to do anything. Actively not do anything so you can allow things to happen to achieve the outcome that you want. If things are going the way you want them to, then actively allow yourself to drift in the positive ways. And then when something is not working, then you take the steps in to create the actions that will change that. But again, it's that awareness of what's going on. Sometimes it's okay to follow that hypnotic rhythm if you're aware of what you're doing. But when you cease to be aware, then you're just a boat drifting in the ocean, taking you wherever the wind happens to blow.
Yeah, there's definitely healthy rhythms and repetitions, and there are healthy ways to, you know, to repeat things. But I love what you said, because it is the power of decision that gets you to feel, believe, and to, you know, acknowledge all things in your life. The next principle, I want to lead into this, because one of my favorite dialogues in this book is, again, the premise is Napoleon somehow in a dream, in a vision, or in real life, we have no idea, but he gets to, he gets the power of God to assist him in interviewing the devil. And he uses this interview to basically have the devil admit all of his tactics, techniques, and strategies that he uses to deceive us and to lead mankind astray. And he starts with this dialogue of, please, please don't make me tell you my secrets. And Napoleon says, shut up and just, or, you know, focus on the questions, because he's compelled to answer every question. So as a result of the hypnotic rhythm and the drifting conversation, he's now basically given away his biggest number one tactic, because he's got to start somewhere. He's got to be able to seed himself and embed himself into the minds of every human being. And he's done a really great job of that. And not to compliment him, but the next step beyond that is the fear factor. And he uses the seeds of fear to lock in your behaviors. So even if you do have an individual thought, you can make decisions for yourself. There are a lot of those decisions, a lot of those cultural aspects that are built on the principle of fear. And fear is a huge motivator, whether we like it or not, as a negative and for a positive. But fear is something that causes us to not want to stand out, not want to drift from the herd or the pack or the usual. It is not good for someone to walk out into public naked, right? And to be fearless of their natural state. But then again, there are laws that have provided safety for other people, and therefore you'll be arrested. So there's just like this idea that fear does keep us in our hypnotic rhythm, and it does keep us drifting. And he uses these tactics, especially in cultures. And we'll get into that with education and religion. We'll get into that with self-discipline. But the seeds of fear is extremely important to understand, because if you don't have a definite purpose, you will drift and you will be in that hypnotic rhythm almost unwillingly, because or willingly is the better word, willingly, because you're submitting, you're conforming to something that you feel like you have no choice. Because if you did make a choice, it would either be humiliating, it would ostracize you, it would make you go to jail or make you different or whatever. Those are extreme circumstances. There's a lot of circumstances that aren't extreme, but those are just the extremes to give you kind of a painted picture. But the seeds of fear, and you guys can figure this out too, because you know, any person who uses fear-based tactics to get you to do something is someone who you probably don't enjoy being around, right? Someone who uses that factor to influence you It is a negative. It is a nasty. It is a weird feeling. And it's because fear is a huge motivator for a lot of people. And you would think that in Hollywood, you know, a lot of those like CIA secret agent interrogation scenes where the guys are using fear and banging things and loud noises and slamming their fists on the table and throwing threats out there that will hurt your family and stuff like that. Those are really aggressive and extreme versions of the words of fear. But the devil uses, you know, subtle hypnotic rhythms of fear to keep you in and to keep you from making your own decisions and leaving or breaking that hypnotic rhythm. And that's just a habit to recognize and know. Anything you want to add to that, Ian?
Yeah, I think fear is the strongest motivator there is out there.
Yeah.
If I were to say, you know, I'll give you $100,000 for you to walk from your house to Denver in the middle of the night barefoot. You might do it. You might get up and start walking there. If I were to say, if you don't walk from your house to Denver in the middle of the night barefoot, I'm going to kill your wife. You would be running out the door with no thought of anything else. Bad example, I know, but fear is the strongest one. And even as a child, that's the first motivation we have for anything. First thing our parents do when we reach for the stove is slap our hand. And we learn not to reach for the stove, not because we understand the importance of not hurting our fingers and how hot it is. We learn not to reach for the stove because we don't want to get spanked. And that fear is the very first, most base motivation that we have. And, you know, the devil keeps that going on with us throughout our life. I was just thinking, if I'm driving on the freeway, what keeps me at a certain speed? It's balancing my desire to get someplace with my fear of getting a ticket. And if I see the police officer, I've tried to break out of my hypnotic rhythm by, when I see a police officer, in my mind saying, thank you for reminding me to drive at a safe speed, rather than quick, slow down before I get a ticket. But that fear is always there because it's so easy to do. We have a fragile existence in life. So many little things could cause us from discomfort to death. And we have to be aware of those fears all the time. So it's not hard to add a little bit onto them to control someone in a certain way. And we all do that through peer pressure, through, you yell at your dogs when they're barking and they stop barking because they're afraid of getting yelled at again. Not because they want to please you by not barking, or they realize the wisdom of not barking at certain times, but that fear is the easiest, simplest way. And it's ingrained deep into our psyche, so it's hard to overcome that and move beyond trying to avoid fear and move to a stronger motivation of, the self-actualization, like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and realizing that side. So the devil is kind of lazy as well and takes the easiest route, which is still the most effective for us. So again, awareness, be aware of why you're doing something, what the actual fear is. And sorry, one more example. Growing up, I had fairly strict parents, which was a good thing for me. But friends would say, well, what would happen if you went out and got totally drunk and came home? Like, oh, my parents would kill me. Well, no, they wouldn't really. What would really happen? I had no idea. But there was a fear in the back of me, even though I didn't know what the consequence was. And it probably would not have been all that bad. That probably would have been understanding and had lots of deep discussions that wouldn't have been fun, but they wouldn't have killed me. They wouldn't have beat me. But there was still a fear in there. Because it was just the easiest way to motivate or control is a fear that you don't want to do something wrong because you don't want to face the consequence. And it just never took the time to think about it.
Yeah.
Which was good for me at that point.
Yeah. Now, those are great examples, Ian. And I appreciate that. In sort of a transition here, we talk a lot about the power of state changers. aggressive, abrasive movements, sounds, or noises and things to break your hypnotic rhythm to get you out of that state. Because while fear is a huge motivator, so is the feeling of, you know, sadness. And sadness is one of those that creeps in, and you know, you want to feel your feels, and so you hold on to it. Anger is also another one. Frustration.
The dark side of the force.
Yeah, exactly. Anxiety is another one. There are these feelings that the body has, you know, reactions to certain circumstances, but yet we can get into a hypnotic rhythm of wanting to be in those for longer than they need to be. Also, if you ask a therapist, you should probably feel them as long as you need to feel them, but not contradicting, you know, psychology. It's important to know that you can break out of anything, and it's not that you're stuffing it down or ignoring it, but you can get out of the hypnotic rhythm of having to feel things longer than you really need to. In fact, you know, most of those motivators don't ever bring any good. You know, it's very rare that anger, fear, anxiety, you know, that they cause you to make better decisions. Instead, you can make informed decisions by having a definite purpose, which brings me to one of my all-time favorite quotes. And I think we shared this on the show last time, but Napoleon uses a quote that really cuts to my core, and it's become a foundation for what we do at Champion Circle. And it's directed my entire life since I read this book. But the quote is, be definite in everything you do. Never leave an unfinished thought in the mind. And I love that quote, because being definite in everything you do means having having the ability to decide, being aware and breaking the hypnotic rhythm by being just truly focused on the things that you commit to in your mind. And then never leave an unfinished thought in the mind, which is, if you let something slip past, you have a great thought and it's to reach out to somebody, but you say, okay, I'll do it later. You're not going to do it later. You're going to forget. And you let that thought go. That is one of the easiest ways to describe this. Describe this theory. Last time we talked about the principle and power of, you know, doing the dishes after you eat, because it's that one touch theory, doing things in the moment because you'll put them off to later. And in a way, we're breaking the power. We're breaking the power of procrastination. And not to get into deep conversation about that, a few more things I'd like to just kind of highlight as we kind of bring this conversation to a close is the seeds of fear are one of those things that deeply root your hypnotic rhythm and your drifting. But what fear has also created is is that you can be under the hypnotic rhythm and as a drifter in some of the most friendliest and positive environments and organizations in the world, namely education. And education is, you know, we all agree that it's important for us to build schools, to put schools and education in the hands of our children so that people can have their own thoughts, so they can learn, so they can grow up to have, you know, the ability to read, to make a living for themselves, to have some sort of functionality. And whether you believe in modern education or you know, there are tribes still in South America who live completely off the grid and don't have books, don't have technology, don't have materials. They just live amongst the land and they use their own tools and they use their own experiences and their historical backgrounds to guide them and protect them. And while they are under protection, you know, even then, like, that's a form of education, is learning the ways of your people. And the reason why I bring this up is education is one of the most highly valued things. I am so grateful for education, the ability to just pick a book off a shelf to read and to grow and to learn. It's a powerful tool. So the devil uses hypnotic rhythm in education by getting into, again, the minds of those who run these organizations, the government, the programs funding our schools, some of even the teachers. I know everybody has a teacher where they said that teacher is the devil. Like, they hated that teacher, right? And everyone has a teacher they love, but there are so many experiences and circumstances and examples of the devil using this principle of hypnotic rhythm and fear to influence the minds of younglings so that they can be under that power for the rest of their life. In school, we have fear that we're going to get the answers wrong, that the test is going to fail us, that we're going to flunk out, we're going to be a failure, right? We also have that social anxiety that comes from, if I do the wrong thing, if I wear the wrong thing, if I say the wrong thing, I won't be liked. That's also one. And those environments and those educations, even sports, even the most aggressive physical things in the world, sports have a tendency to lure people in and keep them focused on the wrong things, depending on the situation, of course. So anyways, it's a matter of that. And I just threw education out there, and I want to give Ian an opportunity to share on education. But the other one was religion. And if you just put religion and education on the same scale of balance when it comes to like learning, then they're equal in this context, not because one is greater than the other, but religion as a learning environment is also a place that the devil creeps in. And though you might be reading from, you know, scripture or let's just say, you know, whatever religion you choose, I'm not going to specifically say which scripture, let's just say your leader or your pastor or whatever is a good person, and they all are, and for the most part, and they want to lead you, they want to guide you in the right direction by giving you information and education. But at the same time, they're human too, and they have not completely broken their own hypnotic rhythms. They have their own motivators, their own fears, their own mindsets, and as humans, we need to recognize that we are leading, guiding, and learning from other humans, which means we are not exempt from hypnotic rhythm, nor drifting, nor any of these these influences. And that's just something to seed in the mind, but not to create total chaos and fear, but just to let you know, like, be aware, as Ian said earlier. Would you like to add anything to that, Ian?
Yeah. just to go back to a foundation of that, we talked about drifting, and Napoleon Hill says that 98% of people drift through life. Only 2% of people are aware. And I think of that 2% that are aware, there's a little portion of that who want to control. And I'm going to, you know, be agnostic in something here and just say that religion and education are the same thing. Mm-hmm. In the end, they are some people who develop some rules that they think will make society better. And they teach those rules to other people. And some people are aware of those rules and agree with them, continue to teach them. Other ones just accept them blindly. And you know, whether it's a tribe in the Amazon that doesn't have books and things yet, but they have learned rules to make life better, and they pass them on to their children. Whether it's this food is good to eat, or it's praying to this God will bring rain. Wherever it is, those are the rules they've learned through their history, or we have, that are good for us. And we just accept some of those things. But we can easily get into a, this is how it has to be. And it's very difficult to change those things. You know, I learned in school that, you know, I learned all of the state capitals. And I had memorized them all and had to be tested on them. And I have to say that extremely useless information. Don't know what good that has ever done me to know the capital of New Jersey, which now that I've said that, I've forgotten what it is, because it was such a useless piece of information. I finally able to get it out of my mind. if I moved to New Jersey, then it's important to know. Otherwise, it's not. So someone said, these are important things to know. This is an important way to learn. This is important. and we all just accept it. And that becomes a way of life for us until somebody becomes aware and says, is that still necessary? And in religious one, when I was growing up, I would go to a religious school, and they taught us to memorize certain scriptures. We had a list of them we had to memorize, and we had contests who could look up that scripture the fastest, who could quote it and memorize it. Recently, I learned that they got rid of that whole system. And they said, rather than having to memorize something that you can pull out your phone and in 3 seconds pull it up and read it, what if you instead had to understand the concept behind it so you can apply it to your life? I said, okay, there's a way of taking that hypnotic rhythm and just rote memorization that's supposed to make your life better. And instead, let's teach you how to think about it. And religion education do the same thing on both sides. Not to be conspiracy minded, but I think there's a lot of people who feel they can control the world to shape it the way they want it to be, whether it puts them in power or their ideas in power, and make everyone else follow those. And other people honestly, truly want to make the world better and believe that that's the way to do it. Hmm. Most of us just follow along with whichever one happens to be in power, and I guess drift along with that until we take time to be aware. And forgive me, I do too many examples probably, but one more. I just came from the dentist this morning, and I was thinking one of the prime examples of hypnotic rhythm is brushing your teeth. You do it every day, morning and night, sometimes between meals or after meals, and 363 days of the year, it's hypnotic rhythm. But 2 days of the year, right before I go to the dentist for my checkup and cleaning, I am very aware of brushing my teeth. It is a very conscious effort because I'm thinking about it. And then the next day, it's back to not even thinking about it. And do I do a good job or not in brushing them? Well, no, because I just came from the dentist and she tells me that. But if there's not something to force us to think about it, the slap in the face, the cold water, the reminder that you're going to see the dentist and she's going to make you lie again by asking if you floss every day. Which I said, not every day. But you know, if you're aware of what you're reading educationally, aware of what you're listening to in church, take time to think about it. And you may do the same thing, or you may want to change it.
I appreciate what you shared, Ian, and it's a huge transition to the closing of this conversation, because now that we've given you all of the problems and we've shared all of the major fear factors and everything that seems very impossible to break through, I believe you just summarized the way to break it, right? Your personal awareness of your environment, your feelings, your thoughts, your expressions, your environment and everything around you, right, is huge. And Napoleon Hill used the word self-discipline is the number one way to break the hypnotic rhythm and to put yourself into the proper rhythms. And again, going along with Mother Nature, who is undefeated, right? Mother Nature's process is a positive process. So if you surround yourself with the money-making, successful, beautiful, full of love feeling hypnotic rhythms in your life, you'll have a life of fullness and you'll be amongst the 2%. But if you can't break that, or if you choose not to break that, because again, you have the decision to do so, you will remain in the current state that you are at. We were joking the other day in our leadership meeting, our executive team meeting, and I couldn't remember the quote, but I think the quote is, if you do what you've always done, you're going to get what you've always got. I think that's the quote, right? And there's so much truth to that, because, you know, insanity is the definition of doing the same thing over and over again, but expecting different results. And as long as we are stuck within the devil's grasp of hypnotic rhythm, drifting, and all of these other major what seem like positive environments, we could easily get pulled in. And self-discipline is the number one thing. And I've personally changed my entire outlook on accountability and coaching and motivation, because I am a motivational speaker. However, I have come to find out and believe that motivation is a bunch of bull honky. Like, motivation is not a fuel. It is a, yes, it can ignite something, but it doesn't last. It's like drinking an energy drink. That's what motivation is. Motivation is drinking an energy drink. Okay. Slashing down some caffeine and really just getting a burst of energy. And you know what? That's okay. Like everyone needs that energy boost, but it's unsustainable. It's something that's addictive. You get addicted to the rush, right? But there are more sustainable ways to do so. And I'm a firm believer in that. And as we transition over to really just wrapping this conversation up and encouraging you guys to develop healthy habits of self-discipline, develop the muscle of self-discipline, develop the mindset that I am a disciplined human being. In fact, when you wake up in the morning, the first thing you say to yourself should not be, "Oh God, it's morning." It should be, "Wow, I am a disciplined individual. Like this is a great place for me to be disciplined. I am the type of person who is a disciplined individual," right? And while that could put you into another type of hypnotic rhythm, it gets you into a decision-making process where you are aware of everything. That's all I really wanted to add and share and sort of wrap this book up. And if you have anything else you'd like to add, Ian, I'd like to throw out one more final tribute to the beauty of this book. But anything else you'd like to add in regards to self-discipline?
Yeah, just a quick one there. I would, just as you said, if you do what you've always done, you'll get what you've always had. I was thinking that same thought in my mind, so I kind of laughed when you said that. And I think that's where we fall into drifting. We either think that we're going to get something different by doing the same things, or after a couple of tries of something not working, we come to the conclusion that nothing will ever work. And we give up on both of those things. And we all get beaten down in life. And that's how we fall into some of that hypnotic rhythm of negative things. But all it takes is really being aware. I was talking to a friend the other day and she said, we got talking about money. She goes, "Well, I've never had any money, so I guess it doesn't matter." Well, are you saying you've never had money because you haven't had money? Or have you not had money because you've always said, "I never have money"? Did you fall into a rhythm of accepting that, or is it because of actions that got you there? Could it go the other way around? And said, yeah, motivation. I'm working on the energy drink. I'm actually working on an IV drip that'll continually put it into my veins directly, so I'll stay motivated all the time. So patent pending, you know. But again, it's discipline, because if you're not focused on doing it, or you haven't developed the positive benefits to doing it, it's entropy. It goes into chaos. Everything goes into the least common denominator, and we never move anywhere different. We never get better. And anything you want to get better at requires you to make a sacrifice and a change. There's nothing you can do that doesn't require that. If you want to get super fat, you've still got to give up time eating or time sleeping so you can eat more in order to do it. There's always something to give up. But it really comes down to that being aware, and self-discipline is being aware that you're creating good habits, being aware you're fulfilling those good habits. So summary is every day ask yourself why. One of my other rules to live by that I try is every day I try to question my core beliefs. Do I still love my wife? Do I still believe in God? And I ask myself those questions, and you know, things go up and down at times, but I become stronger and stronger in those beliefs every time I seriously stop and ask myself that. When you stop asking yourself, then you become those pundits you see on TV talking about politics who just repeat the same stuff without thinking. So stop and ask yourself, why do I do it? Do I believe it? And take time to question your life. Otherwise, you'll never question your life and you won't have much of a life, actually. So yeah. I'll turn it back to you to close this out.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And that was such very, very, very well said, because at the end of the day, we do have a choice. I'll end with this quote here from the book, and it says, "Life gives no one immunity against adversity. But life gives to everyone the power of positive thought, which is sufficient to master all circumstances of adversity and convert them into benefits. And that to me is like, I needed that at this point in the book. I needed that because I wondered, how on earth are we ever going to break the chains? How on earth are we ever going to be able to do this? And I got to admit, just from hearing about the book from hearing about the book's history alone, it intrigued me so much. When I found out that this was a book that has been sitting in a box, protected from the world for you know, almost 100 years, and now recently released to the public, annotated by one of my favorite mentors of all time, Sharon Lecter, and brought to life so that we could benefit from this, I was intrigued and I opened the pages, only to be surprised that this was more than advertised, that this book was a conversation, whether it's a dream, whether it's fiction, whether it's a fable, whether it's an actual, you know, conversation he has, I don't care. It's so impactful in the lessons and how realistic and how informative these can be. And let's just pretend for a minute it's all fake. Let's say that this is not a nonfiction book, but this is fiction. And if it were the case, which personally I don't believe, but let's just pretend it is. I like playing devil's advocate. Hey, boom. But let's just pretend that it is fiction. Favorite books. Can we all learn what to do in a circumstance when you're faced against an adversary? This is a powerful, powerful book, and in many ways very inspired. Whether it was an idea or whether this really happened. And then last I wanted to share is, as I read through the book, not only did it open my eyes to be saying, wow, I am drifting in so many ways. This is one of the few books I have picked up, read, and put down thinking, I need to come to back to myself. I need to be aware. I need to focus on some really, really important things. So this has given me a lot of context. And this book has risen to the top 10 list of my favorite books of all time because of it. And I highly, highly recommend you pick it up, whether you believe in a devil or you don't. It is principles, foundations, and great, great ideas to help you just decide to be present, aware, and to have incredible direction in your life. And to me, that's one of the major principles. Anything you'd like to add, Ian?
Well, devil's advocate, but I think the whole thing's a fable. I think it's all fiction. But it's, at the time it was written, the majority of people, vast majority of people in America, believed in a literal devil. So that made a great way to explain it and to personify these principles, that I believe the principles are absolutely true. And I think it'd be harder to write that book today without a concrete villain to put in. But yeah, I'm repeating the same thing, but be aware, think about things. Don't allow yourself, even good habits, don't allow yourself to just fall into them without thinking about why you're doing it. Because whether you're falling into the devil's grasp and going to hell, or you're just going to have a nothingness of a life, you're not going to be happy in either case. So.
Yeah, well said. Well, thank you for your time, Ian. We appreciate you guys listening, and hopefully you enjoyed our conversations today about outwitting the devil. We do want to invite you to join us next month and go grab a copy of this awesome book. I have one right in front of me. I carry a little copy everywhere I go because I love it, but we want to introduce you to an awesome book called The Four Agreements. This is a tiny little pocket version by Don Miguel Ruiz, and this book will also change your life. I highly recommend it. When first people seek personal development, I always recommend this book because it allows that sense of what Ian just shared, that awareness and how to live your life and to live a beautiful life. And I know you're going to love this book. It's a short read. Look how thin this is and how small its pages are. But the actual book has impactful lessons, and I know that you're going to love it. We might be able to do it in one sitting. We might break it up into four parts only because there are four agreements. but both are very, very impactful. So we enjoy, we invite you to join us next week and listen to our podcast. Also, if you'd like to get in touch with the team or have any questions or share just any thoughts, please send us an email to info@mychampioncircle.com. And with that, we'll sign out and we'll see you guys next time. Appreciate you being here and we look forward to hearing from you.